Welcome to Wiener's Barbecue here on 101.9 FM, CIT Radio, Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada, every Tuesday from 4:30 to 6 p.m. Lots to get to on the show today in a rain-filled day in the city of Vancouver, but at least it's not snowing, and at least I'm able to drive my little Echo on the road without worrying that I'm going to crash into something. But before we keep going here, folks, we've got a special guest on the line to start off the show. Of course, the big news, if you've been following UBC Sports, or one of the big stories, I should say, is what is going on with this team and what league they're going to be playing in 2 years. We'll get into them. We'll talk about that. We'll talk about UBC Sports in general. With us on the line, the guy who knows everything about UBC Sports, he's the guy to talk to, the athletic director, Bob Phillip. Bob, thanks for coming on the show today.
Oh, you're welcome.
Perfect. So, Bob, we've reached now pretty much the halfway point of the 07-08 season. You had a national championship in men's soccer. Women's field hockey made the nationals. Women's soccer made the national championship tournament. Men's football, they were actually a bit of a disappointment, didn't make the playoffs and still haven't won a playoff game since, I believe, 1998. Are you happy with the way the first half of the year went for your respective teams?
Well, absolutely. I think we've done really well. It was funny, just today in the office, we were asking a trivia question. When's the last time all six teams that play all year won their last games before the break, like hockey, volleyball, and basketball this year? A lot of teams that are currently partway through their season are doing very well. And you have to be happy with the national championship, the men's soccer one. I think it was a bit unexpected. On the other hand, I think a lot of people thought the women would win field hockey and soccer, and they didn't, but they got there, and they had great seasons as well.
Yeah, and the soccer teams sort of have it where the men win it 1 year and the women will win it the next, and then vice versa. That's sort of the streak they're on right now.
Seems to be. It seems to be that if you win Canada West, you don't win the Nationals. Men's soccer winning two of the last 3 years without winning Canada West, and women's soccer, of course, winning Canada West this year, not winning the Nationals. So it's really tough when you go up against other schools from Canada West, but I think Cape Breton was full value this year playing at home. That was a big advantage for us in men's, and it was a big advantage for them in women's.
Another sport going on where you guys are doing extremely well right now, women and men's volleyball. I believe the women are 9-1 and the men 8-2, pretty much halfway through their year, so excellent starts for those two teams.
Yeah, you're right. I think the women, not unexpected. They missed the playoffs last year, I think, for the first time in 11 years, and rebuilt, and it didn't take very long for Doug Reimer to do that. The men have been coming on every year. They went to the Nationals last year, probably thought they should have gotten a little further. They made it to the semifinals, had a key injury. I think that might have hurt at that point, but very solid team again this season. So, yeah, they're doing very well, and we're very happy with the teams that are playing out of War Memorial Gym are doing extremely well.
Yeah, we'll get into the basketball in a minute, but women's hockey, I mean, I'd like to sort of put them up there with maybe the biggest surprise out of any of your teams. This is a team that has really struggled in the Canada West in their recent history. A very decent, it's still not that great, but a very decent 5-8-1 to start the year in their first 14 games. Definitely a step up and going in the right direction, women's hockey.
I think that coming off last year's playoff performance, that was the first time they'd made the playoffs, but they didn't do that well against teams like Alberta. This year they were quite surprised. I think a lot of people were. They started 0-6. People expected more, but lately they've been on a bit of a roll, and beating Alberta for the first time ever and getting a point, losing in a shootout the next night, and then coming up with two big wins this weekend against Lethbridge. So, yes, they're kind of, hopefully they've turned the corner. They're 5-8-1 at the break, and they've got 12 games left. They've got a couple of key games coming up against Saskatchewan. I think that'll kind of determine a playoff spot.
And men's hockey, Milan Dragicevic is going to be on the show a little later on here, coming off a sweep this weekend versus Lethbridge. They currently sit in fourth place in the Canada West. If the season ended today, they would host a playoff series for the first time, I think, since 1970. They are clinging to that spot. They ran into a rough spot at one point. They blew a lead against Manitoba at one point at home and then went on a bit of a losing streak, but it seems like they're getting back going again.
I think, well, first of all, Milan's done a great job in recruiting and in coaching the team over the last few years, because it's that the league is really solid. Western Hockey League is now producing 70% of the players that play in this league, and the caliber's really improved. Milan's done a great job, and as you said, 9-7 is pretty good for us at the break. It's a a little better than where we were last year. He's had a few injuries. I guess everybody has. But winning the first two against Alberta really set the stage for them. And as you said, when they played Manitoba at home and they blew a three, I was at the game. They lost. They had a 3-1 lead. I think I was by talking to you between periods, and they lost it in the third period, 4-3. That's a game they'd like to have back, and I think the 1-0 loss at home to Regina, they'd like to play that one over. But all things being considered, they probably lost a couple they thought they could have won. They've lost five games by one goal, and they're heading into the second half. They've got two key games when it resumes against Calgary, and you know, they're poised to make the playoffs once again, and as you say, host that elusive playoff game, which hasn't happened here since 1971.
Is that something the school really wants to see? Even, you know, you've got the new rink coming in next year. Will it be a good, maybe even measuring stick that if UBC does host a playoff series, you'll have an idea maybe of what kind of support this team can get if it's successful?
Hosting playoffs in as long as I've been involved in Canadian university sports has always been huge. You've seen teams. I coached at Sir George Williams University, which is Concordia now, back in the 70s, and we draw 300-400 fans all year, make the playoffs, and get 3,000. Might not be that dramatic here, but I think that it really focuses. You get more media coverage. A series has a way of, you know, the whole series is played in the same spot, and that can really turn people on to your program. And it's been such a long time here. You know, we've had some good success in basketball when we've hosted the playoffs here, and hockey, I think, would be it would be really good. It would be nice to host it in the new rink, but we were kind of worried last year. We thought we were going to host a playoff game for the first time in many, many years and not have a rink to play it in. But certainly now we are back in the Father Bauer, and as you say, next year in the bigger rink.
Well, I'll say is we traveled around the province, especially Mike Wall, who does the hockey games for us. He went to a lot of places. The people that were the nicest to us last year, Burnaby Winter Club, just so you know that.
Well, that's nice.
Yeah. Just so you know that. Both men and women's basketball also off to excellent starts this year. The women 11-1, their one defeat. They did get slaughtered by Simon Fraser up on the hill. And the men's basketball team doing extremely well. I mean, they've set such a high precedent the last couple of years. They're not at that pace, but still 10-2 to start the year. Not bad. So both of those teams doing excellent too.
Well, everybody expects basketball is going to do well because of their recent success, and they certainly have done that. There's been a bit of rebuilding on the men's side, and as you said, they're doing extremely well. On the women's side, yeah, most people were kind of surprised, not that they lost to Simon, but that the margin was so big. But, you know, if you look at the men's game that night, UBC won by about an equal amount, and Simon Fraser's actually played quite well this year before that game and after that game. So they're probably scratching their heads wondering not so much why they lost to UBC, but why the margin was so big. And we're certainly doing the same thing here. But the women get a crack at SFU. I think it's the fourth, fifth, as soon as we resume after the break. And those two games, the home and home, they should be interesting. And I think the men have a game on the Tuesday night following that against Simon as well. So I think you're going to see some good games down the stretch involving Trinity Western, Simon Fraser, and Vic and UBC. I think there should be. And Fraser Valley, I think we have to go out there. I think our season ends in the men's, at least. Well, both men and women at Fraser Valley. So I think there's a lot of good basketball still to be played.
Yeah, Mr. Phillip, I'm going to put you on the spot right now as the athletic director. You know, you've got men's basketball hasn't won the national championship in such a long time. Women's volleyball's also come very close, hasn't won the national championship. Men's hockey hosting, you know, that's what they want to do. If you were to pick one thing to occur, and you had to, which one would you pick?
Well, I wouldn't want to get into that because that's you know, we like to see all our teams do well. But I think the most important thing is the overall success that the teams are having. Not we it's easy for us to sit back and would be to say winning national championships is the most important because we're the most successful school in Canada at doing that. But it's not just about that. You can't take away in women's soccer the type of season they had. I think it's important that our teams do well every time they go out there. And if you ask me whether winning a national championship is more important than having consistently good seasons, I'd say it's not. I really think that it's really hard to win one, and I'm sure Doug Reimer would like to win one. He certainly has had great teams and deserves to do that. But on the other hand, if you look at the performance of women's volleyball year in, year out, that's a really consistent, good program, and we're offering quality programs to the students who come here. So, I'd love to see a hockey home playoff game, so I'd love to see basketball win a national championship. The men's side, the women have won a couple, but I wouldn't want to go and pick.
But overall, no complaints with any of your teams right now?
No, I'd like to see them all win, just like the coaches put a lot of effort in and want to see us do well. But football, you said this year, didn't make the playoffs after last year. They had some very close games. lost their quarterback partway through the season, which didn't help. But on the other hand, there are teams that are really struggling, you know, from coast to coast in football that haven't won for quite some time. And I'm sure we're going to turn around. I think consistency is really important. You asked me earlier about the coaching staff, and you have to have some consistency. The most successful football teams have had their coaching staffs in place for quite a while, and that's what we plan to do. I think that's what it's going to take to be a consistent winner in football. But I'm very pleased with the overall performance of our teams.
And obviously the big topic, or one of the big topics, is getting all the play in the media. The AP Press put a little story out last week. UBC going NCAA, where do we stand at that currently? If you could just sort of refresh us where we're at right now. When's the meeting in January? What are they talking about, and where are we at with this?
The meeting is in Nashville on the second week of January. It's the annual meeting that the NCAA has, and that's where they'll vote. But I think one of the things that's getting lost, and it certainly got lost in the AP article, is the fact that it's not about where we play in what division or to do something better. I mean, for sure we want to have better competition for some of the sports, and we see that in the long term in the NCAA. But it really started because we felt that somebody in Canada had to step up and offer some alternatives to Canadian student-athletes. We hear all the good stories and the bad stories about students that go there, but that's really not important. If you go down there and have a great experience, then why shouldn't you be able to have it in Canada? And if you go down there and have a bad experience, which happens occasionally, not as much as you read about, certainly, why can't you stay in Canada and avoid that? I think that people kind of confuse UBC's wanting to go to the NCAA with the school moving. The school staying where it is. We're a Canadian school. We're proud to be a Canadian school. We just want to offer athletic awards to Canadian athletes to stay in this country and have that same experience rather than have to go down to the NCAA. And that's why we're doing it. And I think that it's kind of been lost a bit in the shuffle.
Well, I mean, where I'll give you guys all the credit here is, you know, you're not, you know, I'm not going to name a school specifically, but there's a lot of schools down there. And even here in Canada, where quite frankly, the grades to get in aren't, you know, at the highest quality. But if a player has the grades, is that kind of athlete, I have no problem with them getting a scholarship, because it's not like you're going to let people in with less grades.
Well, UBC is not looking to change the way it does business academically to accommodate athletes, and I think that's consistent with a lot of the top schools in the Ivy League and Stanford and a bunch of others. You know, the NCAA sets a pretty high bar academically. You must pass 24 credits, in Canada it's 18. You must have a minimum 2-point GPA. In Canada there's no GPA. And if schools get around that, then it's very difficult for the association to do anything about it. We have the same issues in Canada, as you know. There are just more schools in the States. I don't think there's any difference. I think the quality of education at some Canadian schools is great. The quality of education in the U.S. is great. So from an academic point of view, it's not that UBC is going to change what it's doing. We're going to attract top academic and athletic people to our school and give them a good opportunity. It's just that right now, if you want to go down to the States, if you want to play a sport with the time commitment it takes and get a good education, you go to the U.S. A lot of students do that. It's their first choice. We'd like to think CIS is, but it's not the case. And you read about it in the papers, just like this week, where one of the top basketball players who's going to be playing at UBC next weekend at the HSBC tournament is already committed to going to Santa Clara. Those are the types of things that are happening, and we'd just like to give students an opportunity to do that at UBC.
Yeah, Mark Trazzolini will be going to Santa Clara, Vancouver College kid. And another example I have, a St. Thomas More kid last year, he got offered a scholarship to go to North Dakota, and I know that Coach Kevin Hansen really wanted Denny Dumas to come to UBC. So that's a guy, Denny Dumas at least, who, if you guys could offer scholarships, probably for sure would have been a UBC Thunderbird.
Well, quite likely, but I think, you know, what we're looking at is a long-term thing. We're looking at playing in Division II with a couple of sports playing up to Division I. It'll give us a sense of what that entails. But to move up, there'll be an opportunity to do that, but you have to be very successful at the Division II level in order to move on, basketball being a particular target, because conferences get rated, and their goal down there at Div I is to make it to the Final 64, and they want the conference to be rated high. So they're going to make sure that if you come into a conference, you're going to have had a good record at Div 2, and certainly there's going to be some challenges there for us.
Now, my question with moving up is, you're allowed to move up one men's sport and one women's sport. Now, I assume men's hockey, you'll definitely probably be moving up in that. Now, if you then went, say, women's volleyball, are you also able to attach men's volleyball in that?
Men's volleyball is a bit of an anomaly. It will already automatically play in the one division that about volleyball is offered. So it doesn't matter if you're Division II volleyball or Division III or Division I. Everybody goes for the same championship, and your schedule is mixed. So men's volleyball is a bit of an anomaly that way. Women's volleyball is Division II. Hockey, there is no Division II. There are some Division II schools, but they have to play up. So hockey's a sport that you either have to play up or you have to not have it or you have to stay in Canada. You can't play a Division II schedule in hockey. So that would certainly be influential in what decision we make.
So you haven't decided yet which sports you're going to move up in. That's still
being discussed. Well, I mean, hockey is pretty much the sport that we would be moving up in because there isn't any other opportunity. If we wanted to move all the sports in the NCAA, which is the intention, staying in Canada is an option that the NCAA has decided on. Whether Canada accepts that or not, I don't know. But certainly you can be a dual member now of CIS and NAIA, and you can also be a dual member NCAA and NAIA. And according to NCAA, you can be a dual member with CIS. But whether CIS accepts that or not, I don't know.
I've been doing sort of an informal poll. I'll start it again when the new year starts of, you know, just talking to students here in the sub building. And a question I've got from not that many students, but, you know, several of them is, if you guys go NCAA Division I or even NCAA Division II, will it cost the student population any money?
We've already said that we've told the University Athletics Council that that's not what we're planning to do. We have a budget right now in the NCAA in Canada, in the CIS. We have a fairly large travel budget, as you know, because like hockey right now, the closest competitor is Calgary. All of the playoff contingency money that we currently spend would not be required in the NCAA because playoffs are covered. So, no, it's not about adding to our budget. We think we might be able to generate some more outside revenue from sponsors and maybe hopefully for in some sports from gate receipts, and that certainly would add to it. I think our biggest challenge is on the scholarship side where we know some people will step up and help there, but it's not our intention to go back to the students and say that we need to spend a lot more money to run the program there. The travel would be different, but it wouldn't necessarily be any more expensive, and the cost of running Division II teams is about what it is here in Canada. It's not when you go to Division I, like in hockey, I mean, we're already playing at that level right now, so that's not the travel, and our travel goes all the way to Winnipeg, so that shouldn't be a big factor. I know if you start comparing the top 100 schools in Division I's budgets with our budgets or Canadian budgets, they're overwhelming, but if the majority of the schools in the NCAA have budgets less or equal to ours.
Would you even consider doing this without the new stadium being built right here on campus?
You're talking about hockey?
Just the new stadium, the whole thing, going NCAA Division I. How important is this stadium for doing this?
Well, the hockey arena is important because it gives us a building that will seat 5,500 fans, and if we're successful at the Division I level in hockey, we'd have that capability of putting people in the seats, and we'd also like to think that we could play some top basketball games in there as well. So it's important, but also having an arena of that size will allow us to generate a lot more revenue. I think people have to realize also, in the last 5 years, we've held the increase in student fees to the UBC Education Index, which has floated around 3%. And through UAC, we've made that commitment for the next 5 years as well. So we're not looking at a large increase in the student fee. We're generating other revenues from our business operations and the operation of our facilities. And those are people who pay to take programs from off campus and pay to rent the facilities. And we're generating revenues there that are going back into subsidize both the varsity and intramural programs.
A couple more questions. Thanks for doing this, Bob. What does it take exactly, and is there a long-term goal if you guys go to NCAA Division I for getting UBC basketball NCAA Division I? I'm sorry, if you go NCAA Div II, is there a long-term goal, and what will it take for UBC basketball to go NCAA Division I?
Well, for that, we would have to be a Division I school, and there's a moratorium until 2011 for Division I. There are a lot of schools that we've talked to in the U.S. who think we would be a Division I school in the future. But we're looking at playing Division II because, first of all, we think that there are a lot of challenges there in terms of being successful on the court and on the ice and whatever. Well, hockey will be Division I, but the others, we have to prove ourselves there first, and it'll also give us an opportunity to build up scholarship dollars that we would need. I think that's the big difference with Division I, Division II, is the scholarship dollars that you would need to operate successfully at that level. But if you were asking me...
Yeah. Can I ask you why that is, why you have to build up the scholarship dollars?
Well, we don't have enough in our endowment right now to fully fund the scholarships. I know that's a question that the CIS has thrown back at us and said, they'll say to us, well, right now you can give tuition. You're arguing you should be able to give everything and you don't have the money to do it. Well, yeah, you're right, but we'd like to be able to give it to certain athletes, but also we're going to go after people who have been very generous in their donations to us in the past, but have indicated that they would like to build up our scholarship endowment in the future. You know, universities all across Canada give scholarships for academic and other reasons, and we want to make sure that we do the same thing for athletes. So we're very confident we can do that, but it's not going to be something, while you could join the NCAA in 2 years, you aren't going to have enough money if you went to Division I to give the scholarships that you would need to be successful.
So a plan would be, you know, join, and with the revenue you could generate in hockey with advertising, radio fees, maybe getting a couple games. I mean, they play them on ESPN down there. Maybe get a couple basketball Div 2 games. They have some games on ESPN also. Just by going NCAA, you would be able to also bring in more revenue, and then in a couple years after that, maybe have the money to go Div 1. Is that sort of how you're looking at it?
Well, I think that we looked at Division 1 from the beginning, but realistically now that we've had some discussions with the NCAA, and because the option to start off is Division 2, we have to make sure that Division 2 is something that we want to play in. We've been encouraged by some of the discussions we've had with, there are four possible conferences to play in, and two of them have been very upfront with us about wanting us to play. There's another one that's a little afraid of the size of UBC, and but we want to make a commitment there, and it, down the road, I think, you know, when you take a look at a pilot project, and it's a 10-year pilot project that the NCAA is looking at, that can help determine where UBC should play ultimately down the road. If it turns out, as the result of taking a look at how successful we are and what our resources are, we should be in Division I, then we'll apply and move up. I don't see anything to stop us from doing that. It's just that we have to take steps one at a time.
Any chance in the future that football ever goes into the equation here?
Yes, football will be part of our Division II, and if we go Division I, then football will also be part of that. There are different levels of Division I. When you think of Division I football, right away you start thinking of the top 25 teams. But if you take a look at Division One and One Double A, for example, like some of the schools,
yeah,
like Chico State, they played Simon Fraser when Simon was in the NAIA, and some of our coaches were involved in that, and they know that when you start looking at division, the lower divisions, and some of the schools that you would play against, you certainly can compete at that level. A lot of Division Two schools in football are very strong, like Central Washington and others. So, and they could do quite well against some of the Division One schools.
Would you have to build a new stadium or upgrade Thunderbird Stadium, or for Div 2, is this stadium you currently have big enough?
We're fine for Division 2 with all of the facilities that we have. I think that basketball, War Gym, and Thunderbird Stadium are fine for Division 2. Some of the schools, if you look at the football schools on the West Coast, have stadiums that hold 15, 20,000, and some are 4 and 5 like ours. But basketball is fine, and hockey would be fine for Division 1. I think if you looked at Division I long-term, then you'd have to play all your basketball games probably in the arena, or there's also, we've had discussions with GM Place, so you don't know where you're going to land down the road. But, yeah, it would be nice if we needed a stadium that was bigger.
Would it be possible with Div I to play if that, you know, waterfront soccer stadium ever gets built? Would that be something you think would be good for UBC to look at? It wouldn't be on campus, but you'd have a big enough stadium in downtown Vancouver.
Well, much like we have in baseball where we play at Nat Bailey, and it's a great place for us to play baseball. It's a little difficult for the players to go and practice there, but it's certainly a good place for us to play our games. And it would be the same with that stadium. We've indicated to the Whitecaps that we would be full support of them getting that stadium somewhere, and that we already indicated to them that we would look to play soccer there for sure, and if football as well. I think we'd have a bit of a problem with the size of the field if we were still playing Canadian rules, but in the U.S. rules, the field's a lot smaller, but it's something that's very appealing to us.
This is an exciting story, isn't it, Bob? Are you enjoying this, or?
Well, yeah, I've been around a long time, and I've seen a lot of things happen. I was president of the CIS, and I started at Concordia, and here I am at UBC. And it was certainly exciting the first few years I was at UBC, but this is very exciting. I think just the fact that the NCAA changed the rule to allow us to join, I think just that was a significant step. And I think that the opportunities in the future for university sport at Canadian institutions, whether they're in the CIS or in the NCAA. I think the message is out there now that we need to step up and take more responsibility for what we're doing for student athletes in this country, and I think that that's going to be the end result in the long term. But you're right. It's a very, very exciting time for us.
Well, I got to give you credit. You got your teams are doing well. It's a high academic standard school. You're talking Div 1, Div 2. Things are going well. Congratulations.
Well, I got to say, too, and I told you this the other night, that you guys at CITR are doing such a good job. The last couple of years, you're on the spot with interviews after games in Brandon and for volleyball and doing the basketball game the other night, picking up the second half after the hockey game. You're everywhere. You're doing a really good job, and it's a great partnership with CITR and UBC Athletics.
Thank you very much. Bob Phillip, everybody. Bob, you going on holiday soon, or are you sticking around?
Sticking around for a little while. Just between Christmas and New Year, I'll be back to watch the hockey game on the 4th, the basketball game, too.
Perfect. Bob Phillip. Bob, thanks for coming on the show. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Darrell.
Talk to you soon. All right, that was Bob Phillip, the athletic director for UBC Thunderbird Athletics. We're going to be right back with the head coach from the UBC Thunderbird men's hockey team, Milan Dragicevic, in a moment. And I tell you, we're going to get into Div 1 a lot, and I'm going to try to hunt down some interviews for us to find out, you know, how people think this team will do, where they think they should go. I mean, that's going to be a big goal of this show here in the next couple months. But we'll also keep following UBC Thunderbird Athletics as we go. Wow, what a politically correct thing I just said there. Anyways, folks, we're going to go to a quick break right now. You are listening to 101.9 FM, CITR Radio, Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada, every Tuesday, 4:30 to 6 p.m. We'll be right back with the head coach, Milan Dragicevic, currently sitting with a very solid 9 wins, 7 losses in 16 games this season. Their fourth place in the Canada West Pacific Division would be hosting their first playoff series since 1970 if the season ended today. We'll be right back in a jiffy. Time is stalling, hope not won't stop, it's calling. Seem like I'll be falling. There's my lesson. A woman got me stressing. Got no press of confession, but you keep on guessing the messing. Around this town, I need it inside and out. I won't be let down. I can always rely on the music. Let go, let it rock. It'll beat it up on even side. When it hits your body right, the music make you so high. Let go, let it rock. It'll beat it up on even side. When it hits your body right, the music make you so shining, feeling like I'm flying. Wave on soap, I'll be riding. Now it's making sure. All my people moving to our movement. Raising a fist in the air. Music makes me high. All them people, moral, social, static. Music finally divided. When united, we'll find new insight. Now's the time for I and I to shine. Time to free up your mind. So you better rely on the music. Let go, let it rock. When it hits your body right, the music makes you so high. Let go, let it rock, let it beat it up on deep inside. When it hits your body right, the music makes you so high. Let go, let it rock, let it beat it up on deep inside. When it hits your body right, the music makes you so high. Let go, let it rock, let it beat it up on deep inside. When it hits your body right, the music makes you so high. We got to rely. Daryl, I can't get a hold of my interview right now. Come on now. Perfect. We'll be in about a minute. Time to reveal.
determined volition, body movement, not your decision. Down deep inside you realize that the rhythm remedy be blowing up your soul.
Let go, let it ride, really beat it up on deep inside. When it hits your body right, the music makes you so high. Let go, let it ride, really beat it up on deep inside. When it hits your body right, the music makes you so high. Let go, let it ride, really beat it up on deep inside. When it hits your body right, the music makes you so high.
All right, everybody, welcome back to Winner's Barbecue here on 101.9 FM, CITR Radio, Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. I think I had the microphone on that entire break, but fortunately I didn't say anything too stupid. With us on the line right now to talk a little UBC Thunderbird men's basketball, he comes on the show all the time, Vern Knopp. Vern, how you doing today? Oh, look at that. I am off. Vern, how you doing today?
I'm good, thanks.
Awesome. So let's get into it, Coach. Is an interesting weekend for UBC men's basketball. Got to see that you could play great defense. You're taking on one of the top teams in the Canada West. Your number one rival, I assume, in the entire country, the Victoria Vikes. And you got whooped on Friday. You came back, won a very tight, what was the final score on the Saturday here? 64-61 win on the Saturday. Were you guys pleased with the way you came out on the weekend?
No, not at all. We're never happy with a split. We're never happy with a loss. So even though we bounced back Saturday, not real happy with the weekend.
And, you know, just to sort of harp on the negative before we get into the positives here, were you a little also disconcerted with the fact that, you know, you had some big leads up to 10 points at least on the Saturday, and they were still able to come back and make it to the point where a three-pointer at the buzzer by Tyler Haas and you're going into overtime, he just happened to miss the shot?
Yeah, well, I mean, on that possession, we actually did play pretty good defense. I think he had to force up basically a 30-footer at the end, which wasn't close. But, yeah, we weren't real happy with our inability to put them away. Even early in the game, we felt we got up on them early. We were playing really good defense and moving the ball around, and then we just kind of seemed to struggle at times to get that killer instinct. It's something that we even struggled with earlier in the year as well, as far as putting away teams when given the opportunity.
What did Victoria do that gave you guys so much trouble, especially offensively on the weekend?
You know, I don't think it was just one thing they did. I mean, they are a talented team. They're well coached. You know, they want to play the game in the 60s and keep it low scoring. Really, Friday night they just shot the ball incredibly well. The last few years we've played them, you know, we've always kind of said that for them to beat us, they have to hit 10 or more threes. And in the game, they shot 11 for 18 from three-point line, and that was the biggest difference. They just shot a very high percentage. It just seemed like anything they threw up or anybody they put in the game that took a shot seemed to just fall for them. And in our part, we just seemed to really struggle offensively to hit our open shots.
But obviously you made an adjustment between the Saturday and the Friday, because you mentioned they were hitting their three-pointers on the Friday, but they also had some three-pointers where they were extremely open on the Friday. On the Saturday, not so many open three-pointers for Victoria.
Yeah, and that was the big difference from the two games. Friday, for whatever reason, we just had zero intensity on both ends of the floor. Guys, just whether it was just being overconfident or just one of those nights where we just didn't seem to anything Victoria did. Just like I said, they were wide open threes, and at our level, guys that are going to be open for those shots are going to hit those shots. But we were much happier with the intensity level on Saturday, and that's basically what it just came down to was effort.
Yeah, I want to just ask you one more thing, and then we'll get on to some positives on the weekend. I just got to bring it up. What was going on the weekend, do you think, and what's this guy got to do to improve? He's had some great games shooting the ball. He had to miss your Labor Day games because he was transferred. He had an English course, had to be approved to play CIS for, sprained his ankle, had some real good games for you guys. But Blaine LeBranch, no points for you guys on the whole weekend.
Yeah, he just really had a difficult week, or weekend, I should say. During the course of the week, he seemed to be shooting the ball fine. I think with Blaine, it was just maybe wasn't expecting the intensity of the weekend. I guess first time being in that kind of atmosphere as far as between Victoria and UBC. It is probably our biggest rival right now, or it has been for the last 5 years anyway, as far as playoff games intensity goes. He may have struggled with just the intensity level. Not really sure what, you'd probably be easier to probably ask Blaine that question, how he felt and what had happened. But I think it also contributed just the fact that he has missed a lot of time. He didn't play in those Labor Day games. He's missed a lot of practices because of injury, and I think maybe that just kind of caught up with him a little bit.
And on to the positive, a guy who was even good for you on the Friday, and when you needed him in the clutch on the Saturday, you know, he slowed down during the game, but when crunch time hit, this guy stepped up his game again as a UBC Thunderbird. Chris Dick, this guy's for real, isn't he?
Yeah, no question, he is. He is for real. He's basically exceeded all our expectations. I mean, we had high hopes for Chris coming in last year, and as far as maybe when Casey had left, that Chris would kind of fill that void, and he's really kind of taken the bull by the horns and been that go-to guy for us. He was great all weekend. I mean, I think at times we struggled offensively because we didn't get him involved enough, or we got to get him more touches. And I thought Alex Murphy, especially in the game on Saturday, did a good job of trying to get Chris the ball. And that's, you know, it's been a few games now, even going back to the week before against Fraser Valley. He really bailed us out in the last 5 minutes when we were trailing, and also going when we were in Winnipeg and in Manitoba. The last 3 weeks, Chris has just been playing great basketball for us.
Because is that something you can even scout for in a player, or hope that a player becomes? Because Chris Dick's a guy, he's a top player, but he might be he's a truly excellent player when it comes time for crunch time. I mean, he elevates his game those last 5 minutes.
Yeah, he has. It's something that you do try to look for in a player, but ultimately you don't know until they're put in that situation. I can go back to when we recruited Casey Archibald. We thought, you know, he'd be one of the top players in the country, figuring he'd be, you know, we saw a potential All-Canadian in him, but until they actually get into that situation where they can be the go-to guy and lead your team to victory, you just really never know. You hope that they can do that. And that was one of the things we had, you know, Coach Hansen seen from Chris when he had played at Manitoba, that he could come in and be that guy, and he's proving everybody right.
What kind of leader has Chris Dick become for you guys this year? And, you know, I know it's so early in his career here at UBC, but if you can compare him to Casey in the way each of them maybe leads, and is Chris Dick the leader of this team?
I think this year he's really starting to become that leader. Last year he basically just deferred everything to Casey because Casey had been there for his 5 years, and I think Chris kind of sat back last year and learned a lot from Casey. And this year, although Chris isn't quite the vocal leader that Casey was, I mean, Casey, it took him, you know, his third and fourth year to finally step up and be that vocal guy. And I think Chris is starting to show more signs of that in practice and in games. He's more of a kind of just going to go out there and play hard, where he's more of a quiet leader kind of thing, but he's starting to evolve into being that more vocal leader. And I think just based on the last 3 weeks, he definitely has shown to be our leader of our team.
Vern, how do you rate this UBC team? We're just over the halfway point of the season. You guys get a nice trip to Hawaii. You're not going to be playing another regular season game till January 8th at SFU, more than a month from now. So basically at the midway point, how do you rate UBC the first half of the season?
I don't know as far as rating. I think we're happy where we are. I mean, we are in first place in our division. I think we still have the second best record in Canada West. Actually, I think Calgary only has one loss now.
And Brandon has one loss too.
So we're probably third best in Canada West right now. We're happy where we are, but I still think we're still such a young team, and we're still a team in transition, still trying to find roles for guys. I think it's a team that's going to keep getting better in the second half. We're going to have to get better in the second half. The first half was our easier part of our schedule. Obviously we would have liked to win both games this past weekend, but we just got to take the next month, the next 30 days, and you know, although people think just going to Hawaii is a vacation, it really is just going to be like another training camp for us. We're going to be practicing every day down there, and we're just going to look towards building our team chemistry, just continue to get better as just not just as individuals, but more as a team.
Yeah, your next nine games, five of them are against some quality competition, I'm told. I've seen Victoria. Alberta's apparently a very tough team. Saskatchewan, 5-5, but they're apparently tough. Regina's 5-5, and then 9-1 Brandon. That's five of your next nine games. So, yeah, the cream puff schedule, not there in the second half.
Nope, not at all. And I think in a lot of ways, we as a team are really looking forward to seeing how we stack up against those teams. I still think we're the team to beat. I think our players would probably agree with that feeling, but it's going to be fun in January where we get to actually prove to everybody, not just to ourselves, but to the other teams that we still feel that we're the team to beat, and it's going to be a lot of fun to play those games.
Vern, just I mean, this is obviously way off in the distance here, but you know, there is the talk of UBC going NCAA Division I, Division II for basketball to start. I just had Bob Phillip on, the athletic director. As coaches and the players, is this something you guys talk about at all?
No, not during the season. I think there's some talk in the off season as far as you know, what's the future going to hold, but you know, as far as our coaching staff and our team goes, we're just focusing on the task at hand, focusing on this year. You know, our main goal since I've been with the program has been to win a national championship, and that is our goal right now this year. So there hasn't been any talk as far as going Division I, Division II, whatnot. It's just the main focus is this year and at the present time.
What is the quality like? Because it sounds like if it happens, and it could be after next season, that UBC basketball will end up Division II, and then maybe a couple years down the line, maybe jump to Division I. What would Division II basketball be like? Do you have any idea?
You know, it depends what conference we'd be in. I mean, we've been pretty competitive with the division, some of the Division I schools. I mean, I think we've won four or five games of the last 4 years now against Division I schools. I think the only Division II school we've played so far was in Washington. Can't remember even the pro. It was like 5 years ago, and I think we beat them by a couple points. I think Division II is kind of, like I said, it's really hard to say. Really, I would think it's kind of at the level we're at now. I mean, I think we can compete Division I with a lot of the mid to lower schools. I mean, are we going to be a top 50 team in Division I? Not right away, no. Just because it's just a different world down there. But Division II, I think there's no question we can go into Division II and compete for a championship right away.
So is this something you guys are, I mean, if it did happen, would this be a challenge you guys would relish and love to jump on? You know, UBC basketball, you know, I you are going to start off Div II, but then maybe going Div I. Is this something you're excited about personally?
Me personally, no. Not really. I've really enjoyed my time being in the CIS. Just me on a personal basis with the travel, with the Division II and playing a lot of traveling during the week and whatnot, I probably won't be around coaching just because of my job, and that I won't have the ability to just take off during the week. It's hard enough sometimes now just to travel on every other weekend with the team. So me on a personal note, it's going to be kind of a sad because it's kind of the beginning of the end for me when we go Division II. But as far as the rest of the coaches and players, yeah, I think they'd be very excited of going to Division II, trying to play just different competition, American competition. I mean, people in basketball don't really give you credit until you're playing and beating the Americans, and so that'd be something definitely the school would be looking forward to.
Awesome. Good stuff, Vern. And when do you take off for Hawaii?
We leave on, we drive down early on the 27th to Seattle, and we fly out of Seattle, so we'll be late in Hawaii. I think we're arriving at 11 p.m. in Hawaii on the 27th. And we're back on the 5th, I believe, of January.
Oh, so you still have about 3 weeks of this crap weather.
Still 3 weeks of this crap weather. I'm actually happy to see the snow disappeared yesterday. So, yeah, but it's well worth it. If we have crappy weather for 3 weeks, it'll be all worth it when we get to Hawaii. So
you're going to come back. I'm going to see you guys January 8th at SFU, and you're going to be all tanned and everything, the whole team, hey?
Weather permitting, we should all be back with a pretty good tan, so we're looking forward to it.
Bastards, all of you. Vern, have a great weekend, and enjoy the NFL. I despise that holding call on Baltimore there. I despise that call.
Frustrating.
You hear the official might be suspended for the remainder of the season? You hear what he was saying to the I can't remember who it was.
It seemed like he was trying to provoke that one player.
Well, he was calling them boys.
Wow.
He's like, come on, boy, do your job.
Wow.
And they're saying he's a black official using the racial slur,
yeah.
But although he's still black, they're not going for it, and he's probably getting the season.
I think any official, the officials are just there to do their job and not to be yapping back to players. And, I mean, if a player is talking to an official, it's easy for them to throw the flag or kick them out, and I think they should show a lot more respect to the profession by doing that. So if the NFL does suspend them, well, good on them, because I think that shows you that the NFL is in good hands if they don't take that kind of stuff. So
well, we'll find out, because apparently the guy who got kicked out of the game or who was getting all those penalties at the end, I can't remember his name, on Baltimore,
mm-hmm.
that was what really provoked him. Something happened.
Wow. Yeah, well, if that's the case, it's a sad state for the official. So
what'd you think of that call? I thought it was horse crap.
You know, it was pretty. I mean, I could see why they called it. I mean, it was just for that to end on that type of play. It just seemed like there were so many things going wrong for Baltimore at the time, just with the coach calling a timeout before the fourth and one when they actually stopped them, and then they stop them on the next possession, but there's a penalty on the defense. It just seemed like everything was going at that time New England's way, and it was, you know, you just felt. It was funny, one of my friends had said, watching the game, saying, well, you know what, they're going to get it, because if they don't, there'll probably be a pass interference call anyway. Randy Moss is getting away with pushing off, and then you touch them, and it was, you know, I mean, Baltimore has no one really to blame but themselves. 13 penalties for 100 yards, that's, you can't do that against a team like New England. So, you know, it was called, and Baltimore, you know, really has only anybody to blame but themselves for making all those foolish penalties.
Awesome. Thanks a lot, Vern, and I'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, Joe.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
All right, everybody, you'll see New Wieners Barbecue here on 101.9 FM CITR Radio, Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. We are going to take another break right now. When we're back, we are going to continue to talk National Football League. BJ Bass from Nevada, Las Vegas will be back, will be on the air with us when we get back. We're going to talk about, as you just heard, a little Baltimore Ravens, New England Patriots game. I did not like that call at all. The holding penalty, I was really, I mean, I don't, I'm rooting against New England every game they play. But, ugh, was that ever a close one last night. That was one of those that was just, it was just too close. Too close. That was such a tease. That's one where, you know, you're rooting for Baltimore in that game, you kind of feel sick. And I was also yelling at the TV because my Eagles, how did they lose that game to Seattle? We'll be back.
Buying, you're gonna walk that endless highway. wondering by night, wonder by day, yeah, I'm on the road, and it feels like I'm here to stay, yeah, and you're
Welcome back to Winner's Barbecue here on 101.9 FM CITR Radio, Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. With us, as always, from Nevada, Las Vegas, Mr. Vegas, BJ Brian Bass. BJ, how's the weather in Vegas right now? Because we're getting into that crap rain period right now in Vancouver where it will even snow on occasion and make it so I don't want to drive my little Echo on the road.
It's just getting that way? You mean it hasn't been there for a bit?
Well, it's there, but now we're like full bloom. It's like...
You're knee-deep into it now.
It actually hasn't been too bad, but, yeah, the golf days are few and far between. I'll put it to you that way, you know? How's
it down? It's not bad. It's not bad out here. It's getting cooler, but, listen, I can't complain. It's rained one day this year, so, you know.
Not bad. Let's get into the Monday Night Football game. That's the big story here. Was that a hold or not on New England going for it on fourth down?
Wait, sorry, what?
Baltimore, last night. Was that a holding penalty on the defensive player?
I mean, I think so. Don't you?
No, I don't.
I mean, he had a full grasp of the guy's jersey, was impeding his momentum and moving forward, and that's illegal in the NFL. He's past the five-yard marker, so I think it was. I didn't see a lot that I thought was called poorly officiating-wise in that game.
Do you think Jabbar Gaffney, it should have been called a touchdown? Do you think he had possession? It seemed like he was moving that ball a little bit at the end.
No, I think that he did have possession. And, you know, the league has gotten so complex with you know, what counts and what maintains possession and, you know, different rules for different places. One foot in here, only the ball needs to cross the break the plane here, possession here. I mean, they're making it really confusing. I thought that was a catch simply because he maintained possession throughout. You know, they say that carry through of once he steps out of bounds, you know, where does the ball go from there? And it remained in his hand. His fingertips remained on the ball. Yes, the ball was moving, but I think it was obvious that he had control of that ball while it was moving.
The big thing last night, though, the official, you had Baltimore self-destructing. I don't know if you saw the report today. Samari Roll and various Ravens claiming that the official kept calling them boy during the game. Have you seen this?
No, but I mean, you know, how typical of a team that this was going to happen to, of the Ravens, of like literally just losing it. And I mean, I had never seen the team kick off from the 35-yard line of the opposition like last night. And I mean, listen, you know, these guys had a chance to get the ball back. Sure, they didn't have timeouts and there was less than a minute to go. But, you know, they'd been returning punts. The special teams have been playing great for Baltimore all game. And I mean, they had a shot. I mean, as it turns out, they were 2 yards short, and they were going against the wind. Had they gone with the wind, it may have been a touchdown. But if it's a touchdown, you know, does that official call Derek Mason for offensive pass interference? And I think he has to. I think Baltimore was in this game and had a chance to win this game. I mean, they were really beating the Patriots. But as we've learned, you have to beat the Patriots for 60 minutes. You cannot leave any time left on the clock. But these guys are getting closer, Daryl. I mean, what, Philly had them to about the 8-minute mark. Baltimore had them to the 4-minute mark. And, you know, if you leave time on the clock for Tom Brady and the Patriots, you know, they're going to score. They're just that good.
So you don't think that this team is getting help from the officials and last night's victory had a little bit of a crap ring to it? You don't think that like I do?
No, I don't. And, you know, there's been some pretty poor officiating around the league. I think there's a lot of teams that lost games this weekend because of officiating. I'll use the Cleveland Browns as a great example. I think that bomb to Kellen Winslow in the end zone was obviously a force out. That cost Cleveland a game. You know, the officiating didn't cost Baltimore the game. The official didn't make Bart Scott pick up the flag and throw it into the stands. I mean, that's the kind of stuff that where a team just literally, you know, falls apart and just loses it. That's not the official that's doing that.
I think one of the ironies, I'll give you this, in that game is how badly did Baltimore need that timeout that they used on that 4th-and-1 where they obviously shouldn't have called the timeout. How badly did they need that timeout? They could have got at least one more playoff at the end there, you know?
Yeah, well, listen, if they had that timeout, they could have, you know, potentially kicked a game-tying field goal and gone into overtime where anything can happen. You know, the best thing I love about that timeout call is, you know, Brady's doing the press conference after, and they ask him, you know, did you know that Baltimore was calling a timeout? And Brady totally deadpans it and says, yeah, I heard the whistle. I stopped. That's why they caught me. I found that very funny.
Okay. So the big matchup, obviously. I mean, I think Baltimore got robbed a bit. Obviously, they blew it. They were in field goal range at one point late in the game, and I think they took some penalties or Bowler got sacked or something like that. But, I mean, New England, they do have to face, and they will be hosting, a very good and a very hot and another team that knows how to win. They've been pulling out wins themselves this year, Pittsburgh this week, you know? And this is now 2 weeks in a row where these crazy spreads of 20 and 24 points, they haven't even come close to covering.
No, and you know, I think that we may see maybe, you know, one more of those games in this year, but you know, teams are tightening up, and you know, the way you saw Baltimore play is, you know, that was their Super Bowl. I mean, their season is quite obviously over. That team is quite obviously all over the board and having a lot of issues on both sides of the ball, in the locker room, on the field. You know, so it gave them an opportunity to rally together, and obviously the whole Ray Lewis and University of Miami connection with Sean Taylor. But you know, teams are up for these games now. The Jets are going to be up for these games. The Dolphins are going to be up for this game. You know, teams are getting closer, man. I mean, Baltimore had them. Baltimore could have beat them. Philly had them, could have beat them, but they just couldn't play 60 minutes. And, you know, that's obviously something that Pittsburgh is going to do, is they're going to play 60 minutes of football, and they're going to try and take these guys out. They're going to want to prove that they are a team to beat in the AFC, that they are a team to be afraid of. And listen, I mean, they are still very much in the hunt for home field advantage, not that they're going to catch the Patriots. But with the Colts right there, I mean, this is a huge game for Pittsburgh and could really change the look of the playoffs kind of moving forward. Last night, I found myself rooting for the Patriots. I didn't want them to lose. I certainly didn't want them to lose to Baltimore. And you know, I want to see it, Darryl. I want to see this team go undefeated. It's been, 27 years since we've seen a team go undefeated. And I'd love to see that take place in my era, watching, you know, one of my team. I'd like to see that. I mean, that excites me.
You don't like the old Dolphins popping the champagne, and you really want it to be this New England team that does it? You're really that shallow, are you?
You know, I think I do, and this is why, Darryl, because, you know, I kind of realized last night as I'm watching this is if the Patriots do it, you know, it doesn't mean the Dolphins of 72 don't go away. They don't get crossed off the list. It's just now there are two teams that have gone through undefeated. And I think, you know, with what we've seen from the Patriots, what, 3 Super Bowls in 4 years or 5 years, 21-game winning streaks, just complete domination, I would like to see it. I mean, you know, this is something that when, you know, the salary cap came into play in the NFL and you know, they said, well, you're no longer going to see domination, you're no longer going to see dynasties. I mean, we're seeing a dynasty, it feels good, man. I kind of dig it.
Well, let's be clear, though, that if they do go 16-0 and they don't win the Super Bowl, it ain't the 72 Dolphins. Let's be clear on that one, though.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree with you 100%. I mean, they need to go. If they – and listen, you know – the goal is to win the Super Bowl, but I think this team knows that they have an opportunity to do something special, and then their goal is to go undefeated, and then their next goal, once they achieve that, is to win the Super Bowl. But you're right, if they don't, if they go through the season undefeated and don't win the Super Bowl, you know, that takes that argument of, you know, greatest teams of all time, that takes that argument and knocks them down, because as we know, you either win the Super Bowl or you're nothing. And we've seen that time and time again. And, you know, you look at the Indianapolis Colts and finally getting it done and getting over the hump, winning the Super Bowl. I mean, Peyton Manning now and Tony Dungy, the Colts' legacy, is somewhat intact because of that. And had they not won that Super Bowl, you know, there would be a lot of pressure on these guys into this season and into next season, however long that nucleus is together there, of getting it done. And you're right. I mean, the Patriots need to win the Super Bowl to be considered, you know, one of the greats of all time, and to be up there with, you know, the 85 Bears, the 72 Dolphins, and teams like that.
All right, so who do we like? Pittsburgh, New England, who's going to win this? Is Pittsburgh going to cover the spread? Who do we like to win? What do you think?
What do you think?
I think Pittsburgh's going to do it this week.
You think they knock them off, huh?
You know what I want to do, though? The bet I want to place. It's the fun one. I'm sure the odds are going to be ridiculous. I want to see the Dolphins beat them. That's what I want to see in New England. And then as they're walking off the field, they moon the entire stands. Show some butt cheek.
And listen, that's a possibility. And you know, I love the story of – and they covered a little bit of it during the game last night of – you know, the 85 Bears and being undefeated. I think they were 13-0 at the time, and the game they lost was to the Miami Dolphins. You know, the Dolphins were able to put up a fight and you know, knock the Bears off from chasing the 72 Dolphins, and the Dolphins have a chance to do it again, but they're not going to beat the Patriots. I think if the game were in Pittsburgh, I might be more inclined to lean that direction, but the game's in Foxborough. The Patriots are going to be pumped up for the game, and I think they take it.
Okay, is Pittsburgh actually the other? Would you know the spread in that one right now? Or
10.5.
Oh, did they? So we're back to human spreads. We're back to normal.
Yes, we're getting back down to normal slowly but surely. 10.5. The over under is 51. You know, I obviously I'd like 10 rather than 10.5, but you know, I'm going to lay it. I'm going to go with the Patriots because I like cheering for it. I like cheering for them to go undefeated. It's added something to the football season.
Okay, and I'm going to go the exact opposite. Pittsburgh wins.
Win outright.
Pittsburgh wins and they cover the spread. They're going to do both.
Yeah. I mean, I like the over. I like the over a lot. It's you know, the over under wasn't up on most casinos for last week's game. Once again, whether it's going to be posted this week kind of remains to be seen. But if that number of 51 posts, I will take the over.
Did they cover? Was it 51 this week? Did they cover the over?
It was 51. It was actually a push.
Oh, it was a push?
It was a push. Depending on, you know, because it was so weird because it went up, then it came down, then it was up, then it wasn't on. So, you know, not a lot of people had it. So it ended up being a push. It kind of showed that the sports books have been pussified by the Patriots once again.
There you go. How did my Eagles lose to the Seahawks on Sunday?
Well, A.J. Feely, just a terrible game. I mean, you know, when you throw 4 interceptions in a game, you need to put a lot of points on the board to make up for that. And, you know, listen, they had a shot. They just were not able to get it done. The heat is definitely on Andy Reid there in Philly. A lot of heat from the play calling on the offense. And you know, Feely just wasn't able to get it done. The Seahawks defense played great. I mean, the Seahawks defense has at times been porous, but at other times has really kept the Seahawks in the game. You know, getting Sean Alexander back, they didn't build the entire game plan around him as they were doing earlier in the season. So I think that had a big part to do with it.
Seahawks taking on Arizona this weekend. They will be hosting that game. Seattle with the win, I believe, wraps up another, the always difficult to win NFC West. They wrap up another one with a win. Way to go, team.
Yeah, unbelievable that they just keep winning this division, and they've never really looked great doing it. But listen, I mean, the Seahawks are certainly on a roll, have Arizona coming in. Arizona's really banged up injury-wise, and that's a game that the Seahawks should be able to win. The Seahawks are getting there. They're really playing some decent football, and they're getting victories, and that's the most important thing in the league. I think that they're going to be able to get it done against Arizona at home. The 12th man should be in effect, and you know, as far as a better, you have a line of 7 points right now. I I'd like it to be a little lower, but I'll lay it with the Seahawks. I also really like the over. Look for both teams to really kind of put some points on the board.
Yeah, I always love Seattle at home, almost against whoever they're playing. They're 5-1 at home this year. But you say they're on a roll, BJ. This is a team that beat St. Louis 2 weeks ago because Gus Frerotte dropped a handoff on dropped a snap on 4th-and-1. And they won a game this week because A.J. Feely, for some reason, thought Lofotutupu was an eagle in that game.
And true, I mean, they're not doing it like the Patriots are doing it. They're not doing it pretty, but they're getting wins. They're getting victories, and you know, that's what it comes down to at the end of the day is are you able to hang another win in that category? And they're being able to do that.
Yeah, and another team that keeps winning, they somehow pulled off a win. I mean, I left this game. I stopped watching it altogether. The Giants, you look up, they're suddenly 8-4, 21-16 comeback win over the Bears.
Yeah, and you could almost like see the pressure mounting on Eli and Coughlin and the Giants. You know, the last, I think it's 4 years, the record in the second half of the season for the Giants has really been, you know, terrible. Last year they, you know, started the season at what, 6-2, and then lost 6 straight or something like that. You know, so the second half swoon is kind of looming over the Giants, but as long as they're able to kind of pull out victories like they were able to do, you know, they're kind of push that devil off a little bit. And listen, I mean, you know, at 8 wins, obviously, it's going to be real tough to catch Dallas. Both teams would have to win out, and Dallas would have to lose out. But, you know, the Giants are looking great for the, you know, the fifth seed in the NFC playoffs. Playoff hunt, you look at so many teams that are at 5-6 that are still in the hunt in the NFC, and the Giants having a 2-game lead over that kind of big bulk of teams right there is obviously they're in a great situation. They kind of hold their own destiny in their hands, and you know, Chicago's a team that's kind of all over the board. I mean, they, you know, Eli really kind of held his stuff together, and it was great to see him pull out that victory.
Giants at Eagles this week, or I'm sorry, yeah, it is. Is it Eagles? No, it's Giants going into the Eagles this week. That's a tough game. Philly, yeah, they're out of it, but, you know, if McNabb plays, comes back, who knows, and they love to play the Giants tough. That's a tough game to call, isn't it?
Yeah, and especially if you look at the last time those teams played this year was the game in New York where Umeniora had, what, 7 sacks for the Giants. They had 12 sacks of McNabb total. You know, those two teams, no love lost between them. The Philly is going to remember that game earlier in the season and going to want to get a little bit of a revenge factor in there, as well as, you know, throwing a spur in the Giants' boots on their way to the playoffs is something any Eagles fan would love to do, as you can attest to, Daryl. You know, as a bettor, I'm definitely going to be staying away from that game. Too many question marks in Philly. Who's going to play quarterback? What Eagles team are we going to see? What is the defense going to be able to do? On the Giants' side, they lose Derek Ward. You know, so many injuries are running back. Brandon Jacobs, will he be back? Derek Ward is now out for the year after his biggest game as a professional. I think he rushed for 140 yards or something like that. You know, so injuries on both sides of the ball for both teams. I'm going to stay away from this one as a bettor. As a fan, I'm going to root for the G-Men.
BJ, one thing in that game where the Giants were all over the Eagles in that game in New York, Brian Westbrook, who might be the best player in the whole National Football League, was hurt for that game for Philadelphia. Their offense is pretty much nothing without him. And this is an Eagles team and a defense that they get up for games sometimes. And it's almost like Baltimore last night. I mean, they can pull up a performance as good as anybody. So, not very often, but on any given week almost, too.
Well, absolutely. And listen, we almost saw them knock off the Patriots 2 weeks ago. So, you know, you're right. Philly is that team that can get up. And you know, that Giants-Philly game, you know, I was there. And, I mean, Philadelphia was terrible. And Brian Westbrook really is the key to that team. I mean, he is so talented, not only running the ball, catching the ball out of the backfield, special teams. I mean, they really put him and move him all over the field, creating matchup problems for opposing defenses. I mean, if Philly were making the playoffs, I know it's tough with Brett Favre, you know, in the other division there, but you'd have to make a really big argument for Brian Westbrook as MVP in the NFC. I mean, he is such an important part of that team that there's not one other player on either side of the ball that matters more to Philly than Westbrook.
Well, yeah, and he almost ran the punt return back on against Seattle that would have won him the game. He got knocked out of bounds like the 10-yard line there when that game was over. So he does that also. So any other games you like this week, BJ?
I really like Cleveland. Cleveland's going in to play the Jets. I didn't think the Jets were going to smoke Miami out last week. I thought Miami was going to have a chance to get off of Schneid and get a victory. But, you know, didn't work out that way. The Jets hung 40 on the Dolphins. Now they're facing a Cleveland Browns team. We talked about how they were really robbed of that victory at the end there. But a team that's playing very good football. Obviously, their weakness is on the defensive side of the ball. I don't think the Jets' offense is going to pose any issues to the Cleveland defense. Lavernius Coles has the horrible high ankle sprain for wide receivers, so he's extremely hobbled. Cotchery isn't even playing. Thomas Jones and Leon Washington have been very, you know, mildly effective out of the backfield for the Jets. I don't see how they're going to be able to keep up with the Browns that are just going to keep putting points on the game. And, you know, the game against Arizona, Cleveland should have won that game outright. It never should have even come down to that last play. Dropped balls, the Cribs fumble. You know, Cleveland really made some mental mistakes in that game. And the way they're playing football, I like Crennel to get these guys back on the positive track. And 3.5 points to the Jets, I'll lay that any day of the season.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you're talking the city of Cleveland, too, is, you know, the Cavaliers. They had that. They've never won that I can think of. And they had that team in the 90s that couldn't beat Michael Jordan. Of course, the Cleveland Indians, I mean, they were so bad they made a movie called Major League about how bad they were for the longest time. And, you know, they got good after that, but they still haven't won. The Browns, they won some NFL championships, but they've never won a Super Bowl. They had to watch their team move to Baltimore. Now they have their team back. You know, this is the hard luck sports city, I think, in North America. And just who this Brown team is, it was supposed to be terrible. This is probably the easiest team to root for out of any team in the National Football League this year. It's probably Cleveland.
Yeah, no, I agree. It's such a great feel-good story with Derek Anderson and the problems they've had. And I mean, how can you hate the Browns? You know what I mean? It's the Browns and the Dog Pound and you know, Bernie Kosar and, you know, all these teams of Browns past that have never been able to do it. Marty Schottenheimer, all the losses that he had. You know, Denver really beat the crap out of them, you know, when they were good in the late 80s. You know, I'm really enjoying cheering for this team. And they're a fun team to watch. You know, Derek Anderson is really just heaving the ball up there. You know, we're really seeing the development of some young, talented receivers with Braylon Edwards and then Kellen Winslow, obviously the tight end position, but still, you know, Jamal Lewis has been somewhat effective out of the backfield. And it's a great team to cheer for. It's a fun team to watch. They play fun football. And yeah, I agree with you. And yeah, I mean, these guys are right in the thick of the playoff hunt. You know, do I think that Cleveland's going to be able to go on the road, whether it be, you know, Pittsburgh, Indy, New England, whatever it might be, and pull out a victory? I mean, I don't think that they're there yet, but it's certainly fun to watch and cheer them on. And like I said, I mean, you know, laying just over a field goal to the Jets, who have been terrible, I really think that's a gimme play this week.
My MVP for Cleveland this year, their team MVP, is BJ. I know you love the guy who did it, but it was when Chad Johnson jumped into the end zone and those fans let him have it. And my MVP is the guy who threw the beer on Chad Johnson when he jumped into the Dog Pound in Cleveland. And from what I heard, Cincinnati didn't complain. I don't think anything happened to the guy for doing it or the fans for roughing up Chad Johnson a bit. I mean, that was one of the cool things you'll see this year in football, I thought.
Well, and listen, I mean, the Dog Pound is, I mean, that's the stuff legends are made out of, you know? I mean, if there's one place that an opposing team doesn't want to go near, you know, it's definitely the Dog Pound. I mean, you know, maybe the Black Hole in Oakland or something like that.
I think it's the Black Hole in Oakland, actually. You don't want to...
And it's just because those guys are scary, man. Like, you jump into that crowd, you might come down with a shiv hanging out of your belly. You know what I mean?
Awesome. So there you have it. I agree with you. I like the Browns to cover. BJ, I a couple more things here today. I want to get into, I had the athletic director for the UBC Thunderbirds on the show at the start here. And the middle of January, and it looks like it's going to pass, is the NCAA, who has already approved for non-U.S. schools to join the NCAA. They're going to have another conference there to approve. Like, four Canadian schools have applied, UBC being one of them, to go NCAA Division II. UBC will go NCAA Division II, and in two sports, I assume it will be men's hockey and women's volleyball. Men's volleyball also pretty much gets to go up. They will join Div I, and then in a couple years, maybe all the schools join Div II. Who knows what's going to happen in football? From a guy who's down there in the States and living in Vegas, you know, with the UNLV Rebels, I mean, should we be excited that this NCAA Division I, even Division II proposal is underway?
Yeah, I think so. I think that you guys should be very excited about it, just because, you know, NCAA is it's the big leagues of collegiate sports. You know, I think it's important to not get lost looking too much into it. Of, you know, maybe one day, you know, the Michigan Wolverines come into Thunderbird Stadium and play the Thunderbirds. You know, in that sense of it, you know, no. But, you know, seeing the UBC Thunderbirds in the Frozen Four, you know, NCAA hockey is huge down here. Not as much in Vegas as on the East Coast and kind of, you know, in the, you know, Minnesota, North Dakota, South Dakota, Michigan, that kind of region of the country. But I think that's probably the best example of having a Thunderbirds team that could get into the Frozen Four, play a team like Boston U or the Golden Gophers, you know, to win it all. I think that's something that's absolutely you guys should be very excited about.
What about, you know, the talk is about 4 years from now is what I got out of Bob Phillip here today. Do you think there's any hope that a Canadian team could compete or even be somewhat competitive in NCAA Division I basketball?
I think that it would be really difficult. I think that it would have to be a team that had homegrown talent, you know, a guy like Steve Nash. You know, if he had been a part of, you know, UBC basketball and you know, if he had been maybe, you know, able to get these guys to go on a run. But, you know, I think you have to have that homegrown talent, as we've seen with the NBA, obviously, the failed experiment of Vancouver and what we see ongoing in Toronto is, you know, guys don't want to go play in Canada. You know, there's tax issues that come into play on a professional level. There's, you know, immigration issues on a collegiate level. And, I mean, you know, are you ever looking at a guy like, you know, O.J. Mayo, for example, who is, you know, the biggest basketball prospect this year, signed with USC? Are you ever going to look at a guy like that who's, you know, from California saying, you know what, dude, I'm going to Vancouver. I'm going to go play for UBC. I don't think that you're going to see that. I think it would be really difficult. And you know, is it impossible? Of course not. You know, we've seen, you know, look at a team like Gonzaga, who's not really located anywhere fantastic in Spokane, Washington, but been able to get talent there. You know, will those guys cross the border? I mean, I don't know. I guess it's a possibility, but I think that it would be difficult. I think that you would have to have a huge name coach there who is looking at building, you know, taking, you know, signing a 10-year contract, and a guy like Coach K or a guy on that level of building a program up. And the reason I say that is, you know, look at the Running Rebels and the problems that they've had building a basketball program here in Vegas since Tarkanian left, and then obviously all the NCAA sanctions that kind of followed. You know, last year we went out and we signed Lon Kruger as our basketball coach. You know, he was up in the NBA with Atlanta in a failed experiment to go to the bigs, came to UNLV. We made the Sweet 16 last year, and it's still not there as a program. I mean, we had a poor recruiting class. We had two guys that actually had to get left off the team for academic reasons, and we're looking at a kind of a down year for UNLV basketball. So if you're having problems in a city like Las Vegas with a, you know, basketball history that includes a national championship in 1990, and you know, Tarkanian and Larry Johnson and all of this history, and you're looking at these guys having a problem doing that in Vegas, you know, how is it going to work in a place like Vancouver where there's no history, it's a different country, you know, it's going to be difficult.
But there's a guy, Rob Zachary. He went to Gonzaga last year. He was the top high school recruit out of British Columbia. The top guy this year is going to Santa Clara. Those are guys who, if UBC was able to go Div 1, granted not the first couple years, but if they could establish themselves, they might be able to land these guys.
Sure. And my question to you would be, you know, are those guys good enough to take a team on their back and carry them, you know, into the tournament? You know, that remains the question. I mean, you know, we haven't really seen a lot of dominant college basketball players come out of Canada. I mean, you know, even Steve Nash, I mean, you know, his career, he didn't get to where he was until he got to the NBA. He wasn't, you know, the force that he is now when he was at Santa Clara. I mean, it just wasn't the same. He took a little bit longer to develop. And, I don't know, we just don't have guys that are, 7 feet 300 when they're 17 years old, you know what I mean? We don't have that kind of talent for basketball in Canada. I mean, obviously as a longer-term thing, having these schools at a Division I level can help Canada as a country develop their basketball program a lot further. And obviously, yeah, there's homegrown talent. I mean, you're able to keep it there. So, it's something to be excited about. I don't think that there's any way that you would see a team in Vancouver or at UBC being competitive with the likes of Duke, North Carolina, USC, basketball powerhouses like that, I mean, at any point within a decade. But you know what? Maybe that doesn't matter. Maybe, UBC goes on a run, somehow, becomes a mid-major, somehow, wins a number 16 seed to get into the March Madness. I mean, that would almost be a victory in and of itself, wouldn't it?
That would be unbelievable, to be honest.
Yeah, I guess when you're measuring victories, on that measuring stick, then yeah, maybe it is possible.
So there you go. Your thoughts on the BCS selection show? I watched it. Ohio State, LSU. But before we get into that, how great was that final day of the season where Oklahoma took out Missouri? And I don't know, did you watch the Pittsburgh-West Virginia game?
I did not.
Okay.
It was far too boring.
Okay, but so you got to miss West Virginia losing that game to Pittsburgh, the big underdog at home with Dave Wannstedt, the former Bears coach, on the sideline in crutches, jumping
and former
up.
Former 70s porn star.
Was he really?
No, but it was with that mustache.
I hear you. That was a crazy way to end a college football season. You've got the two-loss LSU team going against the one-loss Ohio State team. Your thoughts, or you're still playoff, playoff, playoff? Give me a
playoff. Daryl, I think more than ever it's become apparent that we need a playoff system. It was such a great season in college football, and the number two team lost something like 7 times in the season, and I think we had, 3 number ones lose. There was a lot of movement at the top there, and I don't know, Daryl. I mean, I think there's still too many things that can happen. Where you're looking at it, like you said, you're looking at a team like Georgia who didn't even win their conference being in a position to take a share of the national title. And I don't know, man. I don't really feel it. I'm not into it, man. LSU Ohio State doesn't really excite me as a football game.
I'll say this though, and this is what I believe is a playoff would take away from those regular season games where, even if West Virginia loses that game to Pittsburgh, I mean, that was a semifinal game for them, and that's the playoff there, BJ. And if you can't follow it or you're too lazy to follow it and you can only stick around and watch the playoff games, who needs you anyways? That's the way I look at it. I like the regular season craziness. You know I do, but whatever.
Yeah, no, I think the Hawaii-Washington game ended up being the last regular season game of the season. It didn't tip off till 8 or 9 o'clock. Hawaii was able to keep their undefeated season alive in the last minute of play. It was a great game. It was a great day of football. Like you said, Oklahoma beating Missouri. I don't know. I look at what March Madness is on the basketball side, and I know that you can't compare sports, apples and oranges like that. But you look at the excitement involved with March Madness and everything that comes down to it, and really any team being able to walk out of there, with the national championship. And I'd like to see that on the football side. It just seems that we're making excuses of why not to do it when just doing it. I mean, would anyone truly complain about it? I mean, listen, you and I have always been on different sides of the argument here, but if, 2 years from now they agree to go to, a 12-team playoff system to decide the national championship, would you be angry? I mean, would you be against that if they were just said, okay, we're doing it? I mean, would you not enjoy that?
Well, I'll give you the what I'll say is that, you know, the Red River Shootout where Texas plays Oklahoma, and I like it, you know, at that point of the season where, you know, most years, this is a different year where if both of those teams are undefeated coming in, whoever loses that game is no longer eligible to win the national championship. I like it from that perspective. However, what I think is a major problem, and say UBC went Div 1 in football. Yeah. Say they did it. They're not going to join the Pac-10. They're not going to do that. They'd be a mid-major probably forever. So they would never have a chance at winning the national championship, and that's a problem. I think what they should do is at least to rectify it is Hawaii, if they should be able to make challenges. If you go undefeated, you should be able to make a challenge to a top team and in the country and X conference, and if those conferences refuse to play along in that game, the BCS docks points from those conference when they grade their schedule. Something like that. You have to give your Boise State from last year an opportunity where if they were able to run the table again this year, they probably still wouldn't make the national championship game, and that's a big problem.
Yeah, and that's the whole thing for me is teams like that will never have a chance to do it, and the playoff system is really the only way that they'll have to do it. And I don't think that, you know, the conference championships would be minimized because teams would still be playing for seedings. They'd still be playing for positions. Would Oklahoma and Missouri, say it was a 12-team or a 16-team playoff, they would both make it in. But after that game, Oklahoma would be going in at a much higher seed in a much better position than Missouri would be. So, you know, I don't think that it takes away the importance of the regular season or of the conference championships, because, you know, these guys are then playing for seedings and they're playing for home field advantage and they're playing for, you know, the number one seed and maybe a bye. I mean, however they decide to do it. I mean, all these things still become very important in getting there. You know, we just then have an extra playoff system. You know, I think the question becomes of how many teams you do it with, and you obviously can't go that large, because, you know, then you're pushing the season, you know, another month long. And I mean, these guys are students to begin with. So, you know, I think probably eight teams is too little. I think 16 would be fantastic. I think maybe you just meet in the middle and you call it 12.
Whatever. I'm okay for now. It's all good. Awesome. BJ, good stuff. And I will give you this is, you know, I'm making a special trip, and it's the second time to go down for Las Vegas for March Madness, that opening weekend. I will never make a special trip to go down there to watch college bowl season. I'll give you that.
Oh, there you go.
I'll give you that. Although,
are we going to do a live report from a sports book somewhere?
Whatever we can do, we'll do it. Thanks, Beach. Talk to you soon.
All right, later.
All right, everybody, that's our show today, and there you have it. Mike with Flexor Head is coming up right now. Like to thank all my guests, Bob Phillip, Vern Knopp, BJ Bass. Couldn't hunt down Milan Dragicevic, but what are you going to do? Thanks for listening. Have a great day, everybody.
I've been warped by the rain, driven by the snow, drunk and dirty. Don't you know, and I'm still with it. Out on the road, late at night, seeing my pretty Alice in every headlight. Alice. Dallas Alice. And I've been from Tucson to Tucumcari, to Hatchape, to Tonopah. Driven every kind of rig that's ever been made. Driven the back roads so I wouldn't get away. And if you give me weed, why? And you show me a sign.
the wind, robbed by the sleet, had my head stove in, but I'm still on my feet, and I'm still willing. And I smuggled some smokes and folks from Mexico, baked by the sun, every time I go to Mexico. Peter Town of Paul, driven every kind of rig that's ever been made. Driven the back roads so I wouldn't get way. And if you give me, Mr. Sam Clayton is our conga player. Sam Clayton. Mr. Ken Bradney is our bass player. Richard Hayward is our drummer. Mr. Paul Greer is our other guitar player. Mr. Bill Payne, our keyboard player.
Low door.
We white sand, white, and you show me a sign, I'll be willing to be moving. Thank you all very much.
What has been the result of all these ridiculously rad bands playing at Shindig?
A lot of great new tunes and a lot of beverage intake?
That's true, Bubby, but the most important result has yet to be determined. At finals, come out to the Railway Club and watch the best local bands compete for their chance to win at CRTR's biggest live music event of the year.
Is he talking about those bands playing Tuesday, December 4th at the Railway Club?
Duh.
Show starts at 9:30 p.m. at the Railway Club. Come out, hear the music, enjoy.